stupid as fuck.
Shit, everybody's stupid.
Yeah, well, you need to talk to somebody. Reach out to Eckhart.
I come from a generation of home invasions, and I got daddy issues, that's on me. Everything them four walls that taught me, may have is buried deep. That man knew a lot, but not enough to keep me past them streets. My life is a plot, twisted from directions that I can't see. Daddy issues all across my head, told me fuck a foul, I'm teary-eyed. Wanna throw my hands, I won't think out loud, a foolish pride. If I lose again, won't go in the house, I stayed outside. Laughing with my friends, they don't know my life. Daddy issues made me learn losses, I don't take those well. Mama said that boy is exhausted, he said go fuck yourself. If he give up now, let's go call.
I wanted to come to the podcast the day after Father's Day to kind of get a postmortem on what I've observed in relation to the celebration of Father's Day. Because I didn't want to be too reactionary or proactive in my assessment of what took place on Father's Day, the culture and the consciousness. But I wanted to give an honest assessment, an honest response, and not a reaction. What's important when we talk about Father's Day, for me, is the psychological, spiritual, and metaphysical implications of the idea of the Father. Because the Father is bigger than just a role in a family unit. The Father is a societal archetype that manifests itself in a variety of diverse ways. Well, Rice, what do you mean by that? I'll pause for a second and elaborate. In order to figure out the function of the Father, we have to figure out the function of the family. We have to pay very close attention to the function of the family in relation to the function of the society, and then the society in relation to the function of the state, and the state in relation to the function of the planet, and the planet in relation to the function of the cosmos, and the cosmos in relation to the function of the dimension, and so on and so forth. So to start small, we have to first understand what is the function of the family. And though there have been some versions of, I don't want to say the deterioration of the family structure, but there has been some mutations of what a family looks like. And you see this a lot in fiction today. A lot of fiction pays close attention to the idea of the found family, meaning the family in which shares your blood is not as valuable or can be less valuable than the family that you end up developing through friends, through acquaintances, and so on and so forth. The family can be constructed piecemeal together, which there is a value to that. But once again, we have to ask ourselves, if this is the thing that is happening in a lot of fiction, what is the definition of the family? So the family coincides with the idea of what is the purpose of life. You know, the meaning of life is a question that has existed long before you or I walked on this planet. Many people, many philosophers, many theologians, artists attempt to articulate through their work and through their mission, the meaning of life. What does it mean to be here? Why us? Why human beings? And in a literal fashion, without mincing words, the meaning of life, quite honestly, is the perpetuation of humanity by any means necessary. And so that perpetuation, that necessity to continue the human genus, takes form in many ways. We do so in art, we do so quite literally by having children. So that may make you ask the question, well, Rais, if the meaning of life is having children, then many people are living the meaning of life without knowing it. And my answer to you is yes. Because children instantly bring meaning to the life of an individual. You cannot be an individual anymore once you have something that you must care for more than you. Once you have something under your stewardship, you must start to live like a responsible human being. At least that is the goal. Your life now has meaning. It is an instant injection of meaning into the veins of all participants, having a child. So you may ask once again, well, I see people all the time who have children and don't live meaningful lives. It's because meaning to them has not been articulated the way that meaning is being articulated to you now. They do not know that they have meaning simply by having a child. They lived the purpose of life already. Now, there's many extraneous things that we start to push and pull into life itself. Many questions that come when we are trying to find and establish value in our lives. But the most concrete understanding of life itself is the possibility of perpetuating humanity by any means necessary. That is the meaning of life. And is that human-centric? Absolutely. Absolutely. Our survival is key. Now, when you look at life through the value of our survival, there's many things that allows you to peer through the window pane and understand how survival can be a detriment to our existence as well. Doing anything for survival is just as bad as doing nothing for survival, and that's very key. However, inside of that same structure, that same stratum, when we say, okay, if life itself is the meaning of perpetuating life itself, I don't mean to sound like the Riddler, Batman, but stay with me. If that is the meaning of life, then you have another strand. Well, what is the meaning of the family unit? The family unit, mother, father, child, mother, father, looking over child, is the best way to secure that life in that child is safe. So the purpose of the family unit is to secure the safety of the child. That is the purpose of the family unit. And so once we have that understood, we can now move into what is the purpose explicitly and implicitly of the father. When I think about these structures, I think about the Babylonian creation myth, the Enuma Elish. And in the Enuma Elish, you have Tiamat, the primordial feminine god of chaos who manifests herself symbolically as a dragon, and as well as a dragon, manifests herself symbolically as the salt water. And then you have Apsu, the primordial masculine symbol manifesting himself as the fresh water. And when I first read this myth, God, I don't know how long it's been since I first read this myth, but when I first read this myth, I wondered to myself, why fresh water and why salt water? Why did our ancestors find it important to represent the feminine in the salt water and the masculine in the fresh water? First, I had to understand, why is it important that there are salt and fresh water. What does that mean? Well, salt water means the ocean, and fresh water means rivers and lakes. And so the feminine represented by the salt water over here, and the masculine being represented by the fresh water over here, that symbolizes difference. That symbolizes that men and women are different, at least to our biblical and our ancestors of Babylonia. Men and women are different. And the thing about Apsu and Tiamat, it is their union in by which all the gods in Babylonian mythology were born from, and eventually the grand usurper Marduk. But that's not for this conversation here. So the salt water and the fresh water mingle together and create the gods. Why was that important? Well, it's because our Babylonian ancestors looked around them and they saw that there was this mysterious phenomenon called the ocean. And the beautiful thing about our biblical ancestors and all of our ancestors of that time period, the world was so mysterious to them, so mysterious, that they could not fathom the origin of things outside of attributing symbols to them, making them resonant symbolically. Even language itself, the words that we speak, they are constructed of symbols, and through those symbols we give meaning to them. Letters are nothing but symbols, and the letters construct themselves together to create words, and then words then end up becoming symbols for grander phenomena and experiences and so on and so forth. So the way that human beings construct meaning is through symbolizing events. We live long lives here on this earth, and every single day, could you imagine if you had to remember every single day of your life? But instead, the things that you remember are the ones that have meaning, the ones that are symbolically resonant. The things that are trying to tell you a narrative across time are the moments and events that you remember. So that engine that we have for constructing meaning symbolically is still within us. And it's how we process the narrative of our lives. And so, symbolically, our ancestors of Babylon looked out into the world and they said, I don't quite understand how the oceans got here. I don't quite understand how the rivers and the lakes got here. And not only do I not understand how the rivers and the oceans and lakes got here, I understand that these are both water. This is both water. That's what I can tell, that these things are similar to one another. Yet they're also different. This water here is salty, but this water here is refreshing. And so, symbolically, it started to make sense for them to say, ah, the vastness of this ocean water should represent something. This undrinkable water, vast and infinite, with a bottom that we can't see, feels chaotic. It's without form. When I stand on a mountain and look out into the distance, I see no end. This could be represented by the vastness of the feminine, the formless of the feminine. And the form, order, the flow of the rivers and the lakes, how about we make this masculine? Because it's the bounded space. It is ordered flow. It is not like the feminine, not only in taste, but also in form. There is a rigidity to its motion. How about we make this masculine? But that's not all. What they also thought is, when we put these things together, when we make the salt water merge with the fresh water, it can't be undone. You cannot undo this process. So you see, the merging of the salt water with the merging of the fresh water, that puts together the merging of the masculine with the merging of the feminine in order to make life. Because once you put life together, that process can't be undone. for more explication, once you, let's say you take water from the ocean, water from the river, put it in a cup. Once they are in the cup, it is forever ocean water and river water merged together. Forever. That process can't be undone. You cannot, especially if the measurements are accurate, you cannot calculate how much is river water, how much is ocean water, what percentage of the new particulates belong to the ocean, belong to the river. It is equal, but it also cannot be undone. It is a process of fusion. And so our ancestors thought of reproduction the same way. Because even in the word reproduction, we find a limitation in its manifestation. To reproduce also presupposes that you are doing over again. We are reproducing. But in actuality, when you reproduce, when you have a child, you are making something wholly new. You are not reproducing the entities of the mother and the entities of the father, the characteristics of the mother and the characteristics of the father. You are creating something wholly new. So you see how English has limitations on what it means to bear a child. And so when we talk about fathers in society, we're talking about a very specific function in the perpetuation and the propagation of the human animal. We are talking about the thing that brings form to the formless, the thing that establishes boundaries, rules, and principles in society. And the feminine as a thing that affirms, loves, cares, considers. Those things are how we merge together the ideas. Because when I think about masculine and feminine, there's a lot of talk of masculinity and femininity and masculine women and feminine women in society. I'm never talking about gender per se and how it manifests in the person. I'm talking about a societal spiritual energy. That is what's important when we talk about masculinity and femininity. The cosmological energy, the psychic energy of an individual. For me, when I see someone who is masculine, that's a woman, or someone who is feminine, that's a man, I'm thinking of how society participated in the reverse action that is their destiny, and how do we balance the energy? Because this is trickle down, right? So when we see societal effects, this is trickling down into our everyday life. For example, oftentimes we have shifts. The focus is always how society impacts the individual, because we are a collective species. We are here together. So we're always asking, how does the current of society impact our behavior and our thinking? The governmental temperament affects the societal temperament. The societal temperament affects the individual temperament. And so I often find the sway between masculine and feminine to be like a pendulum. Right now we live in a societal order that is dominated by the feminine perspective. How do I know this? It's because from the moment that I have been born, the life that I have lived, femininity has always been viewed as sacred. It has always been viewed as sacred. Now, that is a completely different understanding than women being in positions of power to make decisions. That's separate. A position of power does not determine how the masculine or the feminine is viewed and cherished, right? From the moment I've been born, it has always been women and children first, men second. In a moment of danger, women have always been placed before men. Always. If a woman comes with a problem to men, a man will take care of that. I've always been around that type of energy. That has always been the norm of where I've been. And if I'm wrong, feel free to correct me on that aspect. But that's the world that I've always lived in. Now, again, positions of power is completely different. Completely different. Like, it's separate when you're thinking about, I don't know, moments in the medieval period where women were strictly looked at as property of the man, women getting abused sexually. If you were just left around a man, you were in a position of danger if your husband was not around. We don't live in that society. We don't live in that society. Or in Islam, in certain hadiths, the opinion of one man is equal to the opinion of five women, and this is just regular in the street. That we don't live in that society. We don't live in that society. We've never have lived in that society. So, when I speak about the feminine energy, I'm speaking about the idea that the feminine is sacred. That has always been the case in my lifetime. But the energy of society today is temperamentally feminine. What do I mean by that? Every single perspective, every single othering is affirmed and reassured, which isn't a bad thing. The shape in which society is taking in relation to how individuals behave is looking for a perspective of acceptance as opposed to acceptance in relation to the traditions of the past. Everything is newness. Everything is creativity, ingenuity, as opposed to the rigidity of, I don't know, the 1970s, 80s, and 90s. You saw this shift. I saw this shift when I looked back in time and I studied. The shift begins in around the 1970s. Around the 1970s, where dominant authority, traditional authority, is being challenged through movements like the Civil Rights era and the Women's Movement, where we begin to start asking ourselves, is the way of yesterday the best way to keep moving? Remember, the masculine archetype appreciates tradition and discipline. And so, with the invocation and the invitation of hippie culture into society, free love, we start to invite inside of the consciousness this idea that things can be different, that love and people should be accepted for who they are and what they are. And then that eventually dovetails into the punk rock era of the 1990s and the burgeoning of hip-hop, where societally we start asking ourselves the question, how should things be? Openly critiquing things intellectually and open rebelling, not in a way of affirming love, but just in a way of, this is wrong, it must be different. And so that dovetails, you also see that effect. So once the masculine is being targeted, not only fathers being absent in the home societally, so you see psychically, the structure of reality is questioning the masculine archetype, the masculine affirmation of government control, the affirmation of tradition. We start seeing that, wait a minute, why are things this way? Why have things been this way? Let's imagine things different. That's when we start to see the masculine disintegrate. And in the home, we start to see that the masculine is absent in the home. Single mother households skyrocketed in the 1980s and the 1990s, and then into the early 2000s, and it's at its all-time high today. But that started in the 1970s. And I'm not going to get too political with Lyndon Baines Johnson and his great society and him offering aid to women if they don't declare their husbands on their tax forms. That's neither here nor there. But what we end up seeing is this appropriation of rebellion against the way that things were. And when you begin to rebel to the way that things were, you're inviting into the energy of questioning the patriarchal rigid structure of yesterday, which is traditionally masculine. A traditionally masculine society says, this is how things are. You don't ask questions. You move and do what you're supposed to move and do as. But in America, that has shifted. And so, for framing, on the top level, You have a society of rebellion pushing against the old standard norms. A key representative of feminine energy transitioning away from the traditionally masculine. And then in the home, you have men being pushed out of the homes, dissipating, going into the background, illegitimate children, broken homes, broken structures. And then in storytelling, you see this very fascinating phenomenon in sitcoms and in cinema. You see the proliferation of the strong male dad. And so art is always a subconscious rendering of conscious phenomenon. So you see the proliferation of Tim Allen, Home Improvement. You see Carl Winslow, Family Matters. You see Uncle Phil, Fresh Prince. See Danny Tanner, Full House. And not only do you see Danny Tanner, you see three girls being raised by three dads. Uncle Jesse, Uncle Joey, and Danny. Right? So they triple the dads. And that's the funny thing about storytelling. So it's saying the writers, they're writing to the dads that society needs. Subconsciously putting that into the ecosphere. And then, here's what you also end up finding in the late 1990s, going into the early 2000s. You see the father, the masculine figure, as idiot, as incompetent, right? You see the Homer Simpsons, the Peter Griffins. So then you see this contamination of the idea of the father being hindered by its incompleteness in the archetype. The incompleteness of the archetype comes from the imbalance. So remember in the beginning when I speak of Apsu and Tiamat, that is the balance proportions of feminine and masculine. We need both in society working at full in order to produce the ideal son, which is Marduk. Marduk in the myth is depicted as perfect. He brings order to the chaos. And he's also depicted as having eyes all around his head. The eyes represent the multitude of attentions he's paying, how closely he peers into the fallacies of yesterday, the focus he displays. And when we focus on what's missing in the family unit very closely, we end up seeing the misattribution of masculine energy. Masculine energy is not the rebelling against all things feminine, is not rebelling against the gynocentric social order that we have today. It is figuring out how to work in complement with it and to reject the things that we do not disagree with, but with compassion. And I kid you not, I've spoken to, I kid you not, probably 7 of my friends who have a household with a father and a mother, and when the father's personality is strong, authoritative, vocal, disciplined, rigid, it creates somewhat of a counterbalance in the son and in the wife. This father, I believe, if they're 50 to 60 right now, they will be defined as baby boomers. This baby boomer generation, especially in the African American community, there's a specific style of dad, of parenting that they adopt. It is this firm hierarchy. You know that you come, if you are the son, you come after the father. You cannot usurp this hierarchy. No matter how much you disagree with how the father is behaving, there is respect there that you cannot undermine. And so, I kid you not, about 6 to 7 of my friends, the same exact structure. But the beautiful thing in this structure that you end up finding is that the mother always ends up becoming a refuge for the child. The mother always ends up being the spot of kindness for the son, for the children. As the children endure the authoritarian dictates of the father, the mother ends up having to create a world all her own, an Eden for the child. And it's funny because masculinity in its purest form is adventure seeking. The masculine energy seeks to enjoy a formless existence similar to what the feminine enjoys inherently spiritually, existence that is free and boundless. But the masculine is burdened down by responsibilities. And so it is the transition into domesticity that causes so much strife for the masculine. Domesticity impacts the masculine different than it impacts the feminine. Biologically, what happens when a man gets a family and is surrounded by children and his wife, his testosterone drops significantly and his oxytocin increases. And let's pay close attention to what that means, right? So testosterone is the creative force for the masculine. It is the force that allows the masculine to go out into the world and conquer and prepare himself for all challenges. It is the energy of aggression. And so you may be wondering, why would that decrease once you have a child and once you have a wife? It's because once a man receives those elements into his life, his purpose in life is accomplished. And so the only testosterone that he needs is no longer to conquer the world. It now shifts. His body shifts. His testosterone shifts its composition towards protection. So the masculine no longer needs that excess of testosterone to conquer the world. It has just enough testosterone to protect his family against threats. But the masculine is what suffers in domesticity because, once again, this aspect of masculinity is not taught. I can't tell you how many times I hear stories of men who go to work, come home, go to work, come home, go to work, come home, and feel burdened by that repetition because their gaze is still focused outwardly. They yearn for adventure, but can't approximate it because their time of adventure is done. That's a key reason why a man should only have children when he is ready to mount the responsibility. Because when you mount the responsibility of having a child, you must look at it as your purpose in life is accomplished. Because that's what happens to you biologically, physiologically. That's what happens to your body. That is what your body is communicating to you. Your lack of motivation, your lack of drive, it goes away completely. Because you have approximated the purpose in your life. See, when I said up top, we have an ancient computer that we call a brain. It is not fully formed to match itself against all of our modern contrivances. We have an old functioning system, an old software, an old hardware. It has yet to be updated. And so take your time when you have these children. Take your time when you pick a woman to have children with. Focus up. Make sure you do everything you wanted to do in this life before you make that decision, because recognize that your body will acknowledge that you've done your job. You are ready to sunset this life when you've accomplished that goal. Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, I appreciate you for rocking with me for 36 minutes. It has been a hell of an episode, a hell of a discussion. If you're listening to me for the first time, my name is Rais DeLuca. And if you're a longtime listener, I'm happy to have you here again. You're alive in the human form. The universe becoming extremely conscious of itself. My name is Rais DeLuca, and I'll see you guys later.
Yeah. Yesterday morning was crazy. I had to come to terms with the fact that it's not a maybe. That shit is in stone, sealed and signed. She not my lover like Billie Jean, but the kid is mine. Sandy used to tell me all it takes is one time, and all it took was one time. Shit, we only met two times. And both times were nothing like the new times. Now it's rough times. I'm out here on front lines just trying to make sure that I see him sometimes. It's breaking my spirit. Single father, I hate when I hear it. I used to challenge my parents on every album. Now I'm embarrassed to tell them I ended up as a co-parent. Always promised a family unit. I wanted it to be different because I've been through it. But this is the harsh truth now. Fairy tales are saved for the bedtime stories I tell you now. I don't want you worried about whose house you live at or who loves you more or who's not there. Who did what to who for you got here. Nah, look, I'm too proud to let that come between me and you now. Realize I gotta think for two now. I gotta make it. I better make it. I promise if I'm not dead, then I'm dedicated. This the first positive DNA we ever celebrated. I can't forget the looks on their faces. Got the news in Miami that now we all got ones that we raising. Tell Jello bring some Mar Rosé and a Baccarat out for our cheers to the next generation. But the champagne toast is short-lived. I got an empty crib in my empty crib. I only met you one time, introduced you to Saint Nick. I think he must have brought you like 20 gifts. Your mother say you growing so fast that they don't even really fit. But man, you know, I still had to get it for my boy though, you know. You haven't met your grandfather yet, that nigga a trip. He probably could have did stand-up, yeah. But at the same time, he's a stand-up. And that's how you gonna be when it's time to man up. October baby for irony's sake, of course. I got this 11 tatted for somebody, now it's yours. And believe me, I can't wait to get 100 more. Sorry, I'm vintage trying to cover ground. They said that in 2 weeks you're supposed to come in town. Hopefully by the time you hear this, me and your mother will have come around. Instead of always cutting each other down. God willing, I got a good feeling. You got a good spirit. We'll talk more when you hear this. My G.
From the rain to ease the pain of changing from boy. come back.